Hey, everybody, this is Dave Hompers. This is the Higher Minded Health podcast. Welcome to the show. And today we are talking to Lisa Dion all the way over in Boulder, Colorado, in the good old US of A. Lisa is an international teacher, creator of Synergetic Play Therapy, and the founder and president of the Synergetic Play Therapy Institute. She's also the host of the Lessons from the Playroom podcast. She's the 2015 recipient of the Association for Play Therapy's Professional Education and Training Award of Excellence and the author of Aggression in Play Therapy, a Neurobiological Approach for Integrating Intensity. And she's also a Master Certified DeMartini Method facilitator even. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you, David, for having me.
It is my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for many a month now since we first bandied around the idea.
Exactly, me too.
To get things going. That's a great bio, great introduction. Most of it is centered around something called play therapy. And I wondered, seeing as though we are running this interview right in the midst of the coronavirus epidemic or pandemic and all the panic and stress and strain that is going along with that, first of all, what is play therapy? What does it constitute? And how does it relate to adults and all the stress that we're all going through at the moment with regard to this pesky virus?
Absolutely. So play therapy is very similar to adult therapy. The difference, however, is that we're using the therapeutic power of play to be able to facilitate the healing experience with the child. That's just a really like an overview way of talking about a play therapy experience. And there are many different kinds of play therapy. Synergetic play therapy, and this is the part that's relevant for what aspects of that relate to adults, and then how do we use the information for our own management of our nervous systems with what's going on right now. Synergetic play therapy, what I teach and educate on is regulation. How do you actually understand the activation in your own physiology? So in a play therapy context, we really look at not only the child's perceptions, but also what's happening in their physiology related to those perceptions, and then how that correlates with the play. And then one of our primary tasks with children is, how do we teach them to strengthen and develop a stronger regulatory capacity within themselves so that they can stay connected through whatever the challenging experience is? So it's incredibly relevant for what we are experiencing right now. All the different pieces that I teach in the play therapy world related to the neuroscience and the interpersonal neurobiology are absolutely transferable over to adults, because what we're ultimately talking about is nervous systems, and we all have a nervous system, and we're talking about what happens between two people, what happens in me, what happens in you, what happens in the space between us, and all of that right now is so relevant.
Cool, thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
It's highly relevant. I think what I'd like to do is take this in the direction of the nervous system. Nervous system and the brain and all of those different things, and what actually we mean a bit more specifically, or what you specifically mean with regard to regulation. In my world, in the mind-body world and the whole higher-minded health world, that we're looking at the internal environment of the person, and we're using functional medicine, nutrition, and things like that to alter the internal environment from a biochemical perspective. What we're talking about here is more a psychological perspective and how that regulates the body. And in many people, that's more important than nutrition and functional medicine, in my experience. You know, I didn't like to admit that 6-7 years ago when I first found out, because it kind of tore my world down and took away all my self-righteous personalities around how important nutrition and functional medicine are. And yes, they are very, very, very important, and people get great results with those. But sometimes what's going on in a person's psychology runs the physiology, and you cannot fix that just through nutrition, lab testing, supplements, and things like that. So what does regulation mean in your world?
Well, let's actually use what's happening right now.
Yeah.
And then use that as a talking point for the discussion, so that we can also offer information for the listeners on what they can actually be even doing right now as well. So it becomes more practical. So let's start with the activation of the nervous system itself, and then we'll get into how do you regulate through that or what are the different ways that you can regulate through that. So the way that I conceptualize the activation, you know, when we perceive any kind of a threat or a challenge, our body is designed to respond. And we have two primary responses in the system. We have a response where we rev up and we go into a fight or flight response, which is high levels of sympathetic activation. And then we also have a shutdown, withdrawal, collapse response, which is related to the dorsal vagal nerve and the parasympathetic aspect of the nervous system. So we rev up to take the challenge on, or we begin to slow down and shut down to go into a protective mode to be able to handle the intensity. Right now, we're seeing and experiencing both at pretty high levels. So we see individuals going into high levels of panic. Even if people aren't going into panic, most people are walking around right now with some low level or even high level degree of anxiety in their system. So most people's fight or flight response is up, which, as we know, we've got then higher levels of cortisol in the system. We have higher levels of adrenaline in the system, and all that's kicking in because we are very much on alert. Now, we are also experiencing moments when it feels like it's too much. And it's too much in the media, it's too much talking about it, it's too scary. And then we go the other way, we want to shut down. So we zone out, we're numbing out, we're checking out, we are zoning out, we want to take naps, we want to stay in bed all day, we want to, you know, there's not just social distancing, but we actually literally want to isolate because we're just, it's too much. And people are all over the place with those different levels of activation and response, whether you're a child or you're an adult. And all of it is totally normal based on your perception and level of perception of the threat or the challenge that's at hand. So that's the dysregulation, right? That's the activation of our physiology. One thing that's really interesting is that when we're born, we know how to do this, right? We're born knowing how to manage this. I tell my students, you know, nobody has to teach a baby how to cry. Nobody has to teach a baby how to respond when it's perceiving a challenge. But the part that's actually more tricky is actually regulating, which is actually the downgrade system in our physiology, because the way that the brain and the way that our physiology work together, it's almost like guilty until proven innocent. So we err on the side of caution, which we can see is happening right now. We err on the possibility that there's a potential threat in our environment, and we respond accordingly, which also means that sometimes we are not responding accurately. We're just responding according to our perception because we don't want to take a chance. The highest priority of the system is to stay alive. So it'll always orient back to that. So I think that's just important that we just recognize that there's activation happening, we're experiencing it, the world's experiencing it, and that yes. But how we regulate through it. Now, here's where I want to bust a massive, massive myth. And I'm seeing this all over the internet right now. I'm seeing articles written on it. And what I'm talking about is the word calm. So many people think that regulated means calm. Regulated does not mean calm. Regulated means connected. So regulated actually means that in a moment where I am regulating, I'm actually connected to myself. I'm actually accessing my vagus nerve. I am accessing parts of my physiology that give me more access to my prefrontal cortex so that I can self-govern. But it doesn't mean calm. Calm may be a byproduct down the road of regulation. But in a moment where I'm regulating, I'll give you an example. I could right now be having a moment where I feel incredibly anxious, right? Anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. And then I take a really deep breath. I'm not calm. I'm still anxious, even though I just took a deep breath. So it's not about I'm calm. It's about, okay, I'm connecting with myself. Okay, I'm having a moment of mindful awareness about what's happening in my physiology. When I take that breath, when I'm having a moment of mindful awareness, because I've become aware of my activation, which allows me to know, okay, it's time to do something or respond, not react, but respond to my activation. Maybe I need to breathe. Maybe I need to go take a walk. Maybe I need to eat something. Maybe I actually need to go take a 20-minute nap. Maybe I need some proprioceptive input and squeeze my body because I feel like I'm a bit out of my body. Maybe I need to go do some yoga. I mean, whatever it may be that my body is saying, look, do something, right? Find, come back. You've lost yourself. You've detached from yourself. Come home, come home, come home. In those moments, I can be regulated in my dysregulation. And I think, David, that's so important right now because when we tell people right now, you know, it's important that you're calm. Most people can't pull that off right now. And then there is a feeling of, what the hell is wrong with me? I'm not calm. Right, because there's an active perception of a threat in the environment. So the probability that you're going to feel safe enough for your system to fully relax and feel calm is not very probable. But if we can recognize that we can actually be regulated in our dysregulation, now that maybe we can pull off. And that is incredibly, incredibly useful in times of crisis because it keeps us, the word I would use instead of calm is poised. So I can be poised. I can still be centered and grounded in the midst of all this that's happening within my physiology.
Cool.
Yeah.
And the knock-on effects of that in terms of the physiological response is that you don't fly out quite so far to the panic end or the traumatic end of the sort of stress spectrum. It's like a sort of, the analogies are like a pendulum. Your pendulum is not swinging quite so far from side to side. And of course, if we think about what the brain and the nervous system are doing, they're actually controlling physiology. We don't have huge amounts of time to discuss that in great detail, but you mentioned it when you said the prefrontal cortex, which is kind of the human part of the brain that our skull has grown to allow to develop in us and no other species, really. You know, the signs of it in other primates, but we just have this huge brain relative to our body, and that allows us to do things that other animals cannot do. But in times like this, it's the older areas of the brain, the amygdala, the brainstem, then the hypothalamus goes crazy and all of these things that are running the physiology. And that developed from an evolutionary perspective to get us the hell out of there or freeze us so that a predator didn't see us. And it's there and it's perfectly normal and perfectly natural. And in many ways, the sense that of the message that I'm getting from you is that maybe it would be nicer to share that message with everybody at the moment rather than simply telling them to calm down. It's okay to be scared. It's okay to be anxious. We all are, no matter how calm we might appear on the outside. You know, I've got a little bit of anxiety from this whole thing as well, even though I'm working hard not to have any. Exactly. So you tell somebody, calm down, calm the fuck down. That's almost the worst thing you can say sometimes to somebody.
Is. Absolutely. Wow. Because the brain, again, is responding according to the person's perception. And so it feels real to them. So when we tell someone that their response is wrong or that they need to calm down, it actually creates another sense of threat or perception or a threat perception that then actually strengthens the activation because now you've just become a threat because you're basically, in a sense, saying you're not okay. Right? There's something wrong with you. You're okay. You need to knock it off. But if we can recognize that right now, the work is simply about learning how to recognize the signs and symptoms in our physiology and in our own activation so that we're not checked out. Because that's step one, is we can't even, we can talk about regulation all day long, but if I'm disconnected from my body and I'm checked out, I can't even go to where we're about to go in the conversation. I have to first allow myself to become aware. Okay, I'm becoming aware that there's certain tensions in my body, or I'm becoming aware that I'm overly sleepy today, or I'm becoming aware that there's certain tension patterns in my body, or that I feel a little headachy, or I feel whatever that may be. We have to listen first. When we listen and we notice, then it allows us to then do something, again, where we are responding instead of reacting. And the moment we move from reacting, which is the animal brain that you're talking about, and we move into responding, now we're moving up into that prefrontal cortex. Now we're accessing the vagus nerve, which I didn't quite say this before, but your vagus nerve gets activated when we're having what's called a neuroception of safety. So in a moment when I experience my physiology and I take a deep breath, in the moment of me taking a deep breath, I'm actually affirming to myself in the moment, I'm safe. I'm safe. See, I can take a breath. See, I'm still alive. See, I'm still here. And as I allow a perception of safety to enter my system, I give myself even more and more access to my prefrontal cortex. And now all of a sudden we have a relationship between the prefrontal cortex and the animal brain, where the prefrontal cortex is able to offer some governance over the animal brain. But unless we can access that, we're just in the response mode of, I need to protect myself because there's a really scary thing happening in my environment.
Sure, sure. And it's all over our language, isn't it? Take a deep breath. If you're feeling nervous or scared, or you're about to do something that you don't really want to do, take a deep breath. Is there a specific breathing exercise that you use with your clients, whether they're children or adults, that might be helpful with any specific timings or techniques at all?
Great. So let's just talk really quickly so that you can, we're talking about identifying what's happening in our physiology. When we have a fight or flight activation in our system, which is high sympathetic, our breathing pattern changes to very shallow. So what it looks like and feels like is you're bringing in more air than you're letting go. So your inhalation is longer than your exhalation. And it's a hyperventilating kind of an experience. It's a shock kind of a hold in the system. Flip side, when we start to go a bit more dorsal and we're shutting down and we're collapsing at an extreme level, you're actually bringing in very little air or oxygen, and your exhalation is much, much longer. So they're not equal, right? They're not balanced. So regulated, balanced breathing is actually really key for this. So if I'm noticing, for example, that I'm having some activation in my system that's sympathetically aroused, I can actually balance out my breathing by elongating my exhale. So I am actually bringing more air in to try to counterbalance the fact that I'm bringing, or should I let more air out to counterbalance how much air I'm bringing in, to then bring my breathing back into a regulated pattern. Same thing true. If I'm starting to feel overwhelmed and it's too much, I can actually sit up, stand up, you know, bring my shoulders back and actually take more air in to counterbalance what's happening in my physiology, to again, bring my breathing patterns back into a bit more of a regulated pattern. And I think right now it's really useful proactively throughout the day to just simply practice balanced breathing. And I know there's so many different kinds. Some people they count into for a certain number and then they hold and then they exhale and then they hold. I know some people that just do inhale and hold and then just exhale. Rather than getting like, oh, there's a really specific way of doing it, what I just tell people is balanced breathing. So maybe it's to your own count of five, and then it's an exhalation to the count of five. Maybe it's an inhalation to a count of five, and then you hold for a count of five, and then exhalation for five, and then you hold for five. It's the system just wants a balanced rhythm. And so I'm not fully attached to, you know, oh, I've got to, you know, hold my nose here and do this, you know, all these, the yoga breathing patterns. Or just balance your breathing at this point.
I really like the sort of inhale for about 3 seconds, hold for 3 to 5, and then exhale really slowly for maybe 7 or 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. But that takes a little bit of practice. And if you're already anxious, you know, it's, and you get more anxious because you can't quite get that pattern right, then it enhances the anxiety again and you start to beat yourself up. Oh God, I can't do this. And so I agree with you. Just keep it simple, everybody, and keep it nice and balanced. And whatever works for you, whatever you find that your body naturally wants and feels comfortable with in terms of a rhythm. Now, I don't want to spend all of our conversation talking about what to do for the coronavirus. I mean, we could go on for hours and hours in all kinds of different directions with that. A little bit more about yourself, Lisa. What led you to becoming a play therapist and then creating your own institute in that area?
Mm-hmm. So my own personal experience as a child that was in therapy. So when my parents separated when I was 9, they took me to see a therapist. And I remember sitting across from this gentleman as a 9-year-old having the thought, you've got to be kidding me. And what I was referencing was my perception that this gentleman had no clue what to do with me. And I actually remember telling myself, just play the game, tell him whatever you think he needs to hear. And after that session, I remember he pulled my parents in and said, you know what, she's doing pretty good. And that was it. And I didn't have to go back. And then fast forward a couple of years, because I still had things that were not resolved. I'm back in an experience with a therapist, and I had the same experience again. So part of my desire to become a therapist was my own experience of feeling like there was a real lack of understanding and how to really connect with me. I also come from a family of therapists. So I have to say too that that's also a big influence. My mother was a therapist. My grandfather was the first Freudian psychiatrist at the Mayo Clinic here. Oh, cool. And when he was 92 years old, he still had people coming to his house that would come and lay on the couch and he'd spin around in his chair and they would do their thing. And then he would, you know, so I have that influence in my family, which is kind of cool. But as far as this piece that we're talking about, because it's one thing to want to become a therapist, but why the neuroscience and why the interpersonal neurobiology? When I, so my daughter now is 14. When I was pregnant with her, I had been a therapist for probably about 5 years at that point. And we were in a car accident when I was pregnant. And I won't go into all the details of what happened, but I ended up not delivering her at the time, although that was what was a high probability. But all the things in that experience led to Avery being born dysregulated, as we're talking about. Avery not being able to be soothed well. Her own ability to regulate was not very good. And at the time, I really immersed myself in the field of neuroscience and really immersed myself in this idea of how do you repattern a nervous system? Because just intuitively, I knew that the impact of our experience together during the pregnancy, I intuitively knew that that had messed with her physiology. So that was really, that was my journey, was I really just wanted to help my baby. And as I started to learn, I just realized, wow, this is actually invaluable information that a lot of people actually don't understand. And it has informed my life so much, and it just naturally translated into, I need to bring this information into the field of play therapy because this is a missing link. So let me go into one other level here to kind of connect some dots. When we're talking about dysregulation, there's really two entry points. I can enter through the mind and I can shift my perceptions and shift my thinking and my mindset, which we know, as you talked about earlier, then influence the physiology and can actually support the regulation of the physiology. But a 3-year-old isn't there. A 3-year-old's not going to sit down and have a conversation with you where they're, you know, fully shifting their perceptions. I mean, they can a little bit. And so sometimes we have to enter through the body itself. And when we are in times of crisis, and let's just be honest, you know, we're talking about this in the context of the coronavirus, but we're also just talking about how do you deal with stress. Yeah. So everything we're talking about now is totally relatable, even if you didn't have the coronavirus as a context. But there are some times when I'm in a situation where I can't say, excuse me for a second. I need to go take 15 minutes to shift my perception right now, you know, or I don't take 15 minutes to go and look at, okay, how is this serving me? And, you know, how do I make sense of this? What I need to have access to is how do I work my physiology in this moment to keep myself regulated in the dysregulation in this moment to give me optimal access to my prefrontal cortex. One of them could be the breath. Another one could be, rather than standing still, maybe I need to actually move. Maybe one of them is just a simple pause and, you know, I'm going to drink some water, cold water. Drinking cold water actually activates the vagus nerve. There's so many different things that we can do in our physiology in the moment that actually support us in being able to stay connected. And then later we can then sit down and go, okay, how do I create some perspective about this? How do I change my mindset around this? And then, so to me, regulating your physiology is both. I have to be masterful at understanding how my perceptions activate my physiology, but I also have to be masterful at learning how to work my physiology that also then affects my perceptions.
Yeah.
And it's both. So all that to answer your question, what influenced you to become a play therapist?
Yeah, no, look, it's really important. It's cool. And thanks for such a detailed answer. I think my personal experience, a nice context or a nice example. I was working with a client recently, more in the nutrition and functional medicine realm, but she shared some of her history with me. And it was the history is quite shocking. She had a lot of childhood sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And as she was sharing it with me, she didn't really hold back and sort of gloss over things. She shared it in reasonably gory detail, if you like. And I did a training course with you a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I'm taking a breath as you're talking.
To regulate yourself, because I couldn't say to her, wow, this conversation is actually driving some of my emotions and my responses. Mm-hmm. I had to use some of the techniques that you taught me off camera, if you like, as we were talking on Zoom, and regulate using my body to keep myself calm as she told me this story. I couldn't say, stop, hold on, I need to go away and do some written exercises and some meditations to sort out my mind and perceptions about these things that you're telling me. I had to be able to do it on the spot. So it seems to me that what you're describing is you need a set of skills to be able to regulate right there on the spot and in the moment. But also, there are lots of things that you can do outside that environment to help alter your perception so that you're not as reactive when these kinds of situations arise. And you need both.
Exactly. So this is what I train people to do. So when I train my therapists, I'm training them in both how to actually work their physiology in the moment when they're with the child. And then also, so that's in the moment. And then also, how do they manage their perceptions about what's going on so that we have a person that is skilled at being able to really manage all of this that is happening. And it's the same thing that I teach. So the course that you took was, you know, for adults. It was for facilitators. It's the same thing that I teach executives and CEOs of corporations, because their ability to manage this has huge influence on their staff and on the company. You know, people that work on the front line that are in high levels of trauma or high levels of intensity. I mean, both of these things that we're talking about is actually just crucial. Parenting too, you know, just for a parent to be able to recognize, oh my gosh, how do I regulate myself in the midst of what's happening right now in this interaction with my child? And how do I do it in a way where I'm responding instead of reacting? How do I manage my own physiology? And how do I manage my perceptions? It's huge. I mean,
yeah.
One of the things for me that I really became really meaningful for me a couple years ago was this realization that this body that I have is one of the ultimate gifts that I've been given. And it's sort of like an instrument, and that my job as a human is to learn how to play the instrument. Because if I don't know how to play this instrument, I don't understand it. I don't know how to work it. I don't know how to tune it when it's out of tune. I don't know how to do any of that. Then I am really at a disservice as I move through my life for being able to function in an optimal way. And it's one of the things I appreciate so much about what you do in your work, because I know that that's part of it for you as well. That, you know, there's so much information in our bodies, and so many of us just ignore it, like, it's just my body, not realizing the wealth of knowledge that we have just sitting right here in any given moment. It's so phenomenal to me. It actually almost makes me teary.
Yeah, look, I can feel it. It is incredible. We do take it for granted. We tend to use it for things like running to the supermarket to buy 139 rolls of toilet roll when we get stressed and things like that, instead of just really starting to understand how it works. But people take it for granted because they don't understand that we're not taught about our bodies in enough detail in school. I think that's where it starts. We don't have an education on how to look after ourselves. Again, that's an entirely new conversation probably to have. Probably even if we did learn, we would ignore most of that advice, because we seem to, even the most intelligent of us seem to need to go through stages in our lives when we go a little bit off the rails, and we sort of come back to be on a straight path after that. And usually that going off the rails serves us in some way. So it's not bad to do that necessarily. Some people probably don't survive that necessarily, and may end up going too far, but we sort of do need it. But in terms of understanding the body, for me, what I thought I understood the body quite well until I started learning about the mind and how the two interact. Yes. And then you go, whoa, this is even more funky now.
Yes.
And so my whole project with the Higher Minded Health is really to teach people how those two entities, the mind and the body, interact, that they're not actually separate as René Descartes would have had us believe, that you can't have an issue in one without it affecting the other. And sometimes the healing needs to be from the top down, from mind into body. And sometimes you need to look at the body and heal bottom up, if you like.
Exactly.
And no two
exactly.
people are the same. And there are a wealth of amazing techniques and technologies out there to help people, but a lot of people don't know where to start. And so it's trying to open up those doors and help people understand that sometimes they might need a slightly different approach than the next door neighbor had, or their mom had, or whatever, and they're completely unique individuals, but there is something out there that's going to make the difference for them.
Absolutely. I love the point that you're saying, because we're not, even though we all have bodies, and yes, there's a fundamental way that our bodies typically operate, right? There are some, you know, generally speaking, the body functions like this. Everybody has their nuances of how that's expressed. And to think that there is a cookie cutter approach, or there's that everybody should do one thing other than breath. I will say that breath, I would put that in the category as, you know, learning
fundamental.
Breath is fundamental, and learning actually how to have a more of a balanced breathing. I would put that in that category. But even just there's nuances for everybody, and for everybody, back to learning our own instrument. I need to spend time learning about my own physiology. I need to spend time learning about my own activation. And to your point, I also need to spend time learning about the different perceptions that I hold and beliefs that I hold that activate the different physiology and the different patterns in my physiology, that both are incredibly important.
Very wise words. I'm glad you mentioned the perceptions again. For me, you know, different hierarchies of importance for different people in terms of what their individual body and mind will need to get them to where they want to go. But the perceptions side of things for me has to be close to number one. This is certainly in the top three. You know, values is right up there. Perceptions is there. They're all intermingled. You can't really separate them. But you can change somebody's life in the space of 10 minutes by helping them shift a perception about something. That perception may have been there for 30, 40 years. And just by asking a few questions, you can help them shift that. I've seen people's symptoms disappear on the spot pretty much with that method, where they may have been trying to change their diet and run lab tests and take supplements for 6 months, a year or longer. And just a simple couple of questions to help them see things differently. All of a sudden, wow, the symptoms have gone. And that's the top down approach. And so for me, that's hugely important. Do you have a really good case study you could share with our audience? Could be anything where you helped somebody transform his or her life in some way.
Absolutely. So do you want me to use a case study or do you want me to use an experience just even that I've had with myself?
Experience that you've had yourself would be equally valuable.
Let me just do that. That way, if you have more questions, I can even speak to that even more. So part of also what got me on this journey was, so Avery would have been almost a year, and I started to notice in my physiology that I didn't have any, my energy was really low. It was hard to get up in the morning. I started to wonder, am I depressed? What is going on? And I went to my doctor, who was a naturopath at the time, and she did some testing with me, and the results came back pretty alarming around pretty significant adrenal fatigue, pretty significant. So she started to get me on different kinds of adrenal support and all of that. So she's working the physiology. About the same time, I also very much recognized that my perceptions about my life at the time were probably also influencing what was happening in my physiology. In particular, that there were a lot of shoulds in my head about how I should be. So how I should be as a mom, how I should be as a wife. There was, at that point, I was working a little bit, but I was mostly being a stay-at-home mom. And I felt this calling inside to get back to work. But I also had this message in my head that said, no, you need to be a stay-at-home mom. That's what's best for your child. So I had this massive inner conflict between the part of me that wanted to be there with my daughter and this other part of me that wanted to be of service in the world in a different way. And I was shutting down my physiology, very much shutting down my truth, my inspiration, all of this. And once I started to align my life, once I started to give myself permission to actually go do and follow this thing that I was experiencing inside, which was begin to work a little more, get creative about how to meet Avery's needs in a different way, how to actually honor, because my physiology was just giving me feedback. Once I started to really honor and acknowledge all of that, I almost overnight started to experience a different experience in my physiology. I went back 4 months later to my doctor, and she tested me. My levels were normal. So when we talk about, could it have been that the different supplements she was giving me were helpful? Absolutely. No question about it. Helpful enough in less than 4 months where all my levels were normal? I don't know. I mean, you'd probably have to speak to that one, David. But for me, what I intuitively knew was it was the combination of me changing my perceptions, shifting my mindset, giving myself permission to be more congruent and authentic with who I was, combined with the support that actually within a very short period of time, I went from not being able to get out of bed to actually feeling inspired and on track and back with my life with a crap load of energy of wanting to get out there and serve the world and be a mom simultaneously. And it's been a beautiful journey since, because that is so much of my life. I'm still doing the dance, but I'm doing the dance now with a more balanced perception around, yes, I actually can be the working mom that can be out there doing cool ass things in the world. And that I can also be just a rockin' mom too with Avery. But I had to balance my perception around it.
Thank you. That's extremely inspiring. And I tell this case study a lot. I've probably mentioned it on more than one of the podcasts. I've had the exact same experience with a client of mine who was in her 50s And she was really bogged down in her life, and her adrenal results, her adrenal hormone results were just, they're the lowest I've ever seen still. I don't really test them as much anymore in the same way as I used to, but they were so low that, you thought to yourself, my gosh, it's going to take years for this lady to get well. And my training in functional medicine and nutrition had been, if people have rock bottom adrenal function like that, it's going to take 12 months. They have to go to bed at 9 p.m. every night. They have to take all these supplements. They have to, they must, they should, all the things that you've been talking about, shoulds and musts and have tos. And we just had a conversation one day about her life, and it came as a surprise to me. I didn't really expect that conversation to happen during the consultation, but it's just as I'd started to learn about the mind one of our shared teachers, Dr. John DeMartini, it was two or three of his MP3 downloads back in 2012. And I thought, maybe I'll just ask her about some of this stuff. And we had this massive heart-opening experience and consultation. And then she went off and started to do lots of things that she'd not done, that she'd suppressed, that she thought she wasn't worthy of doing. And when we retested the hormones, they'd pretty much normalized without any more nutrition and supplement changes. So the idea of adrenal fatigue, I also wanted to just address quickly, because in our industry, in my industry, functional medicine, adrenal fatigue is seen as this three-stage process, which is mapped on top of Hans Selye's model, which we don't have too much time to go into, but it's an alarm phase where the adrenal glands are overactive. They're making lots of stress hormones. There's a resistance phase where the stress may be resolved and things go back to normal. But if the stress is not resolved, everything burns out. And we get this thing called adrenal fatigue or adrenal exhaustion as stage three. I don't think the adrenal glands burn out. I think what burns out is the communication pathways between the brain and the adrenal glands. And that's why changing perceptions and doing this mind-based work can suddenly kick people into action in a very short space of time, where somebody else might have told them it's going to take a year or two for that to happen. What are your thoughts on that? Because it's a neurobiology, right?
Absolutely. I mean, 100%. I tell my students, so in my training programs, there are a handful of different programs, but when someone gets into the certification program, it's a 9-month journey. And I tell my students that what I want to do is do a test at the beginning of the program, and then I want to recreate the test at the end of the 9-month program, because I can actually see the physiological changes in my students, because we're working on perception and we're then also working on learning how to regulate the body. But I see, without a doubt, across the board, I see people's overall symptoms change. I've had people, this is just in a training program. This isn't even the work that I just do one-on-one with clients. I've had people say that their OCD symptoms, have gone away. I've had individuals that talk about, different things that they would have labeled as like addictive patterns shift. I've had people talk about their own hormone levels change, their own levels of inspiration. In the mental health field, we talk a lot about compassion fatigue and vicarious trauma. Those signs disappearing. With that combination of learning how to work your perceptions, learning how to recognize and see order in the apparent chaos that they're experiencing, because that's really, when we're talking about perceptions, what are we really talking about?
Yeah.
How do I really see the order here? How do I really make sense of what is happening and recognize that what is happening is actually in service of me and my growth, not in my way, or not something that's trying to stop me, but that there is a grand order to what we are all experiencing. The more they can see that, I'm seeing huge changes with my own clientele. I mean, same thing across the board, depression lifting, anxiety levels shifting. I've worked with individuals. I had one woman, this might actually be the most inspiring case that I've ever worked with. She came to see me seemingly for relationship challenges. Turned out that she had been a meth addict daily for probably almost 10 years. And this is a woman that you never would have guessed, because she didn't look anything like the poster person for a meth addict, right? Beautiful, put together, like you almost like, really? Yes. And so we got to work on all the things that were influencing her need to be able to go and use. And we worked, we started the journey in January. We did a lot of different learning how to regulate her body, knowing that she was going to have to work at being able to manage that because that's what she was using the meth for, one of the reasons why she was using the meth. So we got her skilled on her body, and then we started to get to work on the perceptions. And then we chose the week, so this was in June, so it's a very short period of time. We chose the week in June that she was going to get off of meth. We met every single day, worked on perceptions. She has been clean now for 4 years, and what I can tell you is she had zero withdrawal symptoms from being a daily meth user for 10 years. In fact, I just got a message from her a couple months ago that she now has a baby and she's absolutely thriving. And it was, the perceptions were huge. And then it was also then this other part of her learning how to manage her own physiology. But the combination was huge. And you don't hear things about someone getting off of meth with no withdrawal symptoms, but I can tell you, I saw it. It happened.
Absolutely. Look, and you and I can believe it because of the work that we've done. And it may seem far-fetched to people watching and listening, but that's why we're here chatting. Maybe one of us will be able to serve somebody who's listening in that kind of way and help them change some perceptions and what have you. I think, transforming somebody's perceptions is difficult because we all like to think we know it all. We have that sort of self-righteous part within ourselves, and we can't escape that. It's a beautiful part of ourselves, but our upbringing, our socialization, everything that we've been through leads us to almost download or install software programs within our nervous system and body, which you might call the hardware. And so the body is the hardware that's been or it's received programs. It has programs installed in it from our past, and we can uninstall and change some of those programs. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always take lying on a couch, no disrespect to your
totally.
psychologist talking about your sexual problems when you're 3 years old. That's complex. You don't have to do that. Sometimes the change can be just so simple, but so powerful at the same time. One more case study from me. I had a lady who'd worked with a functional medicine practitioner in the States. She was in the UK, but they worked by distance consulting, and she'd spent a lot of money, into the thousands, and she'd responded quite well initially, but then gone sort of backwards again. And it was clear after our first couple of consultations that there was just something not quite there with her perceptions of a husband. Her husband works as a mechanic, and he would be away at the weekends motor racing and things, and he'd be needed and he'd be away. They have a son in, I think he's 9 years old, something like that. And she would be very stressed because the husband was away. And all I asked her to do, and you know this exercise, I asked her to go away and write down 20 to 50 benefits uh-huh. of her husband being away for the weekend. Uh-huh. And the next week she just said, I can't believe it. I feel so much better. My anxiety levels have dropped down. I'm sleeping better. All these issues had started to clear up just from a simple perception exercise. And that's all it took after several thousand pounds lab testing, supplements, and things like that. Now, of course, disclaimer, that doesn't happen for everybody. It's not necessarily reflective of the results that everybody gets.
Yes.
But again, the purpose of these chats is to show people about some of the simple things they might be missing out on that they really could be doing. So I think we're coming to the close of our time. I'm sure we can do this again sometime because there's massive amounts of things that we can cover.
Absolutely, yeah.
What advice would you give your younger self? If you could give one or two pieces of advice, what would they be?
Yeah. To really stay connected here and to listen to your body. As a young child, and then I think this is so true for so many, we spend so much time orienting outside of ourselves, looking for ourself out there somehow, like that we're out there, our validation's out there. But it would have been to begin to learn about your body, and become more aware of the communication and what it's trying to tell you, and to recognize that your safety is here, not out there. Orient within. You got the answers here, not out there. Would have been my message to my younger self.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Listen, you know, listen.
Yeah, listen yourself rather than ask somebody else what's wrong. What's wrong with me? Well, mm-hmm. If you go inside, you'll be able to figure that out for yourself more often than not. Now, that doesn't mean scrap your medical care. The right. medical technology is there as an amazing tool that we can all use. Functional medicine's there, et cetera. But stop and listen to yourself, I think, is a beautiful piece of advice. And do you have any health rituals, anything that you will not miss out on during the day to keep yourself either regulated or healthy? What do you tend to do to make sure that you stay in as tip-top a condition as you can?
So mine has to do, I know we haven't spoken a lot about nutrition here, but we'll just throw that in. That's the other component too. We know that nutrition also plays a role in regulating our nervous system and our physiology. So for me, it's more like, what do I need to do? And more like, what I absolutely won't do. So I've learned through much trial and error and listening that my body does not do well with dairy, does not do well with gluten, and also does not do well with sugar. And so for me, one of the things is to listen to my body and what my body needs to eat, and also just have that be a part of something that is really important to me on a regular basis, to try to keep my diet as clean as possible, because my own physiology and feedback have told me, that doesn't work for you. That doesn't work for you. That doesn't work for you. So I kind of went the other direction of like, you know, how do I honor my body on a daily basis? And it has to do with food.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. I think I'll throw in another case study that I've mentioned a few times. And I work with a 2.5-year-old kid who'd been weaned off obviously mother's milk and what have you, who developed epilepsy just mysteriously as he was weaned. And that turned out to be gluten that was triggering. So we talk about all the psychology, and you mentioned earlier, it's difficult to, you can't really do a therapy session with a 3-year-old by verbal communication and asking them about all the trials and tribulations and problems that they've had in life. But sometimes you can just get them to change their diet in a simple way, and boom, that's what just happened to be the trigger for the epilepsy in that child. So food can be absolutely critical as well. And if your body's reacting against certain foods that you're eating, that can lead you into anxiety and depression, and doesn't necessarily have to be your perception, right? It could be all kinds of things. But you can go full circle and then say, well, when you developed that food allergy when you were 7 years old, what was going on in your life?
Absolutely.
And deal with that stress from age 7 or whenever that allergy kicked in, and you go back and process that.
Yes.
Psychologically. And now the allergy goes away. So
absolutely,
you can never separate the mind and the body. If
absolutely.
People want to learn more about you, Lisa, and what you do, where can they go to learn more?
They can go, if they want to learn more about me and the work that I do with adults, they can visit my website at lisa-dion.com. If people are curious about the synergetic play therapy and all of that, they can go to synergeticplaytherapy.com.
Cool. Thank you. Right. I will make sure that those links are available for everybody to click on as well. Hopefully spelt properly. I sent an email to you yesterday and it was not quite spelt properly. So I'll double make sure that doesn't happen again. So I think that's it. We'll wrap up.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for
being
my guest. I'm humbled to have you on and honored. It's been fantastic. And I've learned 2 or 3 things, even though we've chatted a lot and attended courses together and what have you. I've learned 2 or 3 hugely important things today that I didn't know before. So
awesome.
Much obliged for that. And so I think it just remains for me to wrap up, everybody. Thanks very much for listening. If you would like to inquire about running an initial consultation or running some lab testing functional medicine-wise with myself or Jack, please email us at info@davehompez.com. Higherminded Health.com will be up and running fairly soon. Lisa, I'll send you a link when the website's up as well. It's not quite ready yet. And hopefully we'll be able to help you out, either Lisa or me or somebody else. Don't give up. Whatever's going on, regulate. I'm going to say stay calm, but only through regulation, not because I'm telling you to do something that you can't bloody well do under these stressful situations or circumstances. And Lisa, again, thanks very much. And I will see everybody soon. Thank you.
Thank you.